Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown! Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Number 6! Number 6!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
90-yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has Knighton. Caught! Touchdown! Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Whoa, that was a touch-up. Chargers blown out of SoFi 40-17 against a firing Tampa Bay. Jesse Minter has the interrogation lamp turned on him as the defense concedes over 500 total yards. Herbert under an injury cloud again, leading into the game. Sacked and had it pulled back, that foot of his pulled back. Oh, maybe interesting to watch over the short break heading into Thursday night football. The streak is over as well. 357 consecutive passes without an interception ends. And look, maybe we don't want to blame QJ, but he had to be right there, didn't he? Here to break it all down for you, I'm Andy. I'm with Jack and Al. Welcome to the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast, riding through a tough day at the office. Jack, mate, I got a question for you straight off the bat. Is there concern for this Chargers offense making it to the playoffs from here on out?
Oh, as in like the team make it to the playoffs, or if we make the playoffs, are we actually going to win?
No. That's a genuine concern, is this postseason threat, but actually making it there.
I think I did the numbers and looking through X after the game, I think what you have to do is we have to lose out and we might not make it. Even if we lose to Denver, we have to beat both the Patriots and the Raiders to get in. But it also depends on whether we're the sixth or the seventh seed. So ideally we win all three games, but I don't know. And it's really hard to be hyperbolic, right? Because... you know, if you do log on after the game and look at the criticism, it's like, fire Greg Roman, this is not good enough, it's ridiculous. But the Arizona game was probably not as bad as this one, but some of the numbers are damning, right? Like, we've got negative 0.382 average EPA per play. That's terrible, absolutely terrible. Our third down efficiency was at 17% per CBS, and our fourth down efficiency is at 0%. Like, this ball is not moving, and you're right in saying that Minter has the microscope turned on him. But to be honest, I think the microscope is across this whole team. It just so happens that Minter let up those 500 yards, which looks pretty shitty on a score sheet. Alistair, not trying to be hyperbolic, but is it creeping into your mind that this team could be built on sandy foundations that we've kind of built up throughout the year, but now the rain's coming and we're starting to see the building settle a little bit?
Maybe it is, Jack. Noting you didn't quite answer Andy's question, so we'll come back whether you actually think they'll make the playoffs or not. But I'll let you throw the heat onto me. I think there's actually a good stat that answers your question and talks about whether this is built on shaky foundations. Now, last week, I used the test of Jim Harbaugh's own words. I said, you know, were we at our best when our best was needed against the Chiefs? This week, I'm going to go a little more lowbrow. I'm going to refer to a guy who Jim Harbaugh quoted in a press conference early this year. That's the nature boy, Ric Flair. Apparently, Jim Harbaugh's friends with him as well, which is a very strange pairing. I would not have thought they'd have much in common. But as Ric Flair would say, to be the man... Gene, you gotta beat the man. Woo-hoo! And if you think about the Chargers this year, I've done some digging, and the Chargers' record against teams that are 500 or worse, so losing teams, sorry, less than 500, losing teams, 6-0. Against teams with a record of 500 or better, 1 win, 6 losses. The only win comes against the Broncos. So to answer your question.
Can I just add before you go there, have you looked at the defensive splits per PFF as well? Because against teams above 500, the defensive grade is 66.4, but against teams below 500, it's 89.3. So we are absolutely dominating teams that are below 500, but kind of average at best against the better teams. Just to add some more numbers in.
I think that point speaks to a deeper problem with the NFL. That is there really anything such thing as an elite defense in the modern NFL? Listeners, tell us what you think. But the number of times recently where the number one scoring defense or the number two scoring defense gets to the playoffs and still has 35 points put on them tells me, can you really build your team around a number one scoring defense in 2024? But yes, I think the numbers suggest it is a little bit shaky. It is a great thing we're beating the bad teams, but clearly we're not quite good enough at the present day to beat the good or better teams. But Andy, I'll give you a chance to jump in. When I speak to you about those numbers, a record of 1-6 with their only win coming against the Broncos being a better than 500 team, how do you feel about that? Like, are you... I mean, what comes to mind for you when I go through those numbers against good and bad teams?
I mean, it's nice to win games. Couldn't do that last year. Didn't matter who we were playing against.
The That's eternal a very, optimist.
A very optimistic look at it. It sort of feels right. It feels like it's kind of a true indicator of where we are as a team. And I think that's what backed my question to you, Jack. Like, you know, we're talking about what will happen to this team once it comes into the playoffs. Well, by that metric, we've got less than a 15% chance of winning a wild card game playing against a team that's, you know, with a winning record. So it just, we've just shown against good opposition, unable to sort of beat a flaky Chiefs team, get completely exposed and have 40 points put on us against Tampa Bay, Baker Mayfield. Wild. So it just, we're not playing consistent across the board enough to be up there with the best teams. So I think it's a pretty good indicator of where we are.
Yeah, the team is not built in Harbaugh's image just yet. I think I remember saying when I was doing my win totals that Harbaugh's going to be worth 3, maybe 4 wins just as a coach. And I reckon that's maybe where we're at, because if you take those away, then kind of we're a sub 500 team. It just doesn't feel like a playoff worthy roster. It's just too battered. It's just a little bit, I don't want to say soft, because soft is being harsh on the players. They go out there and play their hearts out. I just don't think the physicality is there. Mind you, you know, we've never had this tactician at the helm in terms of a, you know, we got to just beat the players or the teams in front of us. It's a long season. You never know what'll happen. If you get your name at the dance, you're in there. You just don't know. So, but the injury to Herbert is clear, and he looks frustrated. The team looks frustrated. So I just don't know where we go, Alistair. I don't know what the offense does now, because it's really bad.
Well, let me jump on something you said. Talk to me about this tactician at the helm, because I've been waiting all season for this. All season I've been saying, hey, listeners, someone listen to me. He's doing stuff that's against the math, but we keep winning, so who cares? What did you think about this week's one? Listeners, what I'm talking about is the cowardly punt. So I'll set the scene very quickly. It's the second quarter. Tahib still has an interception. We get the ball. We go on a 3-play touchdown drive, 17-10. Rashad White fumbles the ball. Boza picks it up. We've got the ball again. Okay, let's put our foot on the pedal. Let's go. We go 3 downs. We end up in a 4th-and-6 situation from the Bucks 42. So your choices there are J.K. Scott punts. You send Cam Dicker out from what would really be a 59-yard field goal, or you go for the 4th-and-6. Well, he punts it. J.K. Scott screws up the punt. Touchback. Bucks get the ball. Momentum gone. What did you think about that moment?
For me, it's, I honestly thought with the play call and decision that Justin Herbert made to throw short of the sticks, and I'm going, okay, we're going to go for it here, clearly, because he's made a quick read, and it's what was it? It was a 5-6 yard gainer.
Stone smart,
stone smart across the middle. You go, okay, we're going for it, and then I'm just going, what? I cannot remember, Alistair, a point in a game where I can, everything just goes back to that. What do you call a point where it's sort of, it's a
crossroad?
I don't know, like a crossroad or like a really key point to go.
Inflection point.
Inflection point. That's what I'm looking for. Thank you. Is that, you know,
he goes away.
There was no feel for the game absolutely no feel for the game. And you know that the quarterback sitting opposite you is such a streaky player, and he's throwing a pick. There's been a fumble. Just step on the throat and go for it. I really hated it, actually, Andy. Did you, how did you feel about it? I always just kept going back to that moment being like, up, if that didn't happen, we wouldn't be here. Up, if that didn't happen, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, well, I mean, having that conservative mindset's one thing. Then going for the delay of game to give yourself five extra yards and then having your bluff called, and they go, decline. You can kick it from there. That's what you're going to do. And lo and behold, just hoofs it into the end zone. Really deflating. You could see it unwinding from that moment. The momentum
Scored again.
Nah. And, you know, like we let them go down the field, score a field goal. And sure, we still had the scoreline in our favors, but then we spoke offline, Jack, coming out of halftime, just looked flat all over the shop. And yeah, look, it was pretty dreadful from there. Having another 27 points scored against us in that second half was brutal to watch. 500 yards against is one thing, but part of me thinks that a bit of it falls on the offense because they've got possession of the ball for 36 and a half minutes, or close to 37 minutes. And I think, like, if you've got the ball that much, 500 yards is, you know, and defense isn't playing well. It was one of those weeks where we really needed defense to do more than provide us with two early turnovers and good field position for us to score. They just simply couldn't hold on to Evans, Irving, you name it. Really struggled to be able to get off the field. So that was a really flat point.
Well, let's do a check-in, Andy. I'll ask you about Greg Roman. We've discussed him almost every week and our views have kind of evolved, moved with changing facts. Talk to me a bit about this game, how you thought Greg Roman went against Todd Bowles and the various challenges he presents as a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, so you know he's going to mix it up on the back end with a very injury-depleted secondary, mind you. Mix it up with, you know, making Herbert make the decision. So showing a lot of cover zero, and he sent the house. We know Todd Bowles likes to blitz. Did he ever? Created so much pressure with those big boys up the middle. So Herbert was under the pump early. There was a sack, Dean, I think it was. Oh no, Levante David, where he actually just ankle locked him. And that was probably the worst thing he could have had happen to that injured ankle. So
yeah, he went unblocked straight up the middle. Postman's looking to the left. Pipkins is looking to the right. No one picked up a linebacker.
Yep. Absolutely smashed. The big thing for me about Roman was knowing that you're going into the game with an injured Herbert. Why aren't you creating a game plan that suits that? Why are we running the ball 11 times? Why is he falling back into 5-7-step drops, having to launch the ball down the field? Because early on, running the RPOs, we had some nice little connections over the middle. It felt like a little bit more of a multi-tiered offense, but that just sort of fell apart and the pressure got to Herbert big time. O-line was getting smashed and turnover, injured, packed in the running game completely. So there was just, once they sent the blitz, they knew they were close to getting home.
Like play action's great, right? Because especially early in the game where the defense is going, oh, well, they could run. But then very quickly you realize, there is no running game with the Chargers. Absolutely none. So whatever Herbert's doing there's a ball snapped, who gives a shit? Just get to him, send the house. And we've always said the Achilles heel of this team is they cannot pick up the blitz. You send it, you send it, you send it. Eventually, Justin Herbert gets a little tense. And it was very, very Philip Rivers-esque. That lobbed ball off a back foot to go, ooh. And I'm going, I haven't seen that all this year. When was the last time you saw Justin Herbert sky a ball like that? And, you know, you said QJ could have done a bit more. He possibly could have. But, you know, to have his first interception in however many games, you know, he's now top five players of having these snaps where he hasn't thrown interception was just icing on a cake of a terrible, terrible Roman planned and executed offense. Alistair, I said it to you before, you didn't ask me, where does the offense go? Because we know that the running backs are not going to get targeted. We know the offensive line doesn't have the skill or the power to run the ball. What do we do? Because I don't know. I really don't know.
I think the answer is there's not many, many places for them to go if Herbert's going to be hobbled on his ankle. I really think that is severely limiting. If Herbert was able to move around a little more than he was on the weekend, it opens up a lot of elements of the playbook, whether it's rollouts and then Ladd McConkey being back and having that RPO option, the scramble ability that Herbert was starting to do a few weeks ago, you could see potentially the vision of this getting back to being a top 16 offense by the end of the year rather than top, you know, bottom 10 or bottom 12. Right now, I don't know. I really don't know. I tell you, like, they could just try and reclaim this identity that they've lost, which is, hey, we like using jumbo packages. We like using unbalanced formations. Let's actually run the football with Gus Edwards, and hopefully J.K. Dobbins is back soon, because I suspect that'll make quite a difference with him back in the lineup. Otherwise, I don't know. That's why they pay Greg Roman the big bucks. Here's what I think is the most damning comparison, right, guys? And I thought it was apt. Justin Herbert was blitzed the second most in his entire career on the weekend. It was 63.9% of dropbacks. Particularly in the second half, every passing down was a blitz. The most he's ever faced was last year. You might remember week 3, Minnesota.
The Vikings? Yeah, I was going to say the Vikings. Yep.
Brian Flores sent on 85.7% of dropbacks. But here's what a good OC does. You might remember Kellen Moore's game plan in that game. Herbert against the blitz. There were 40 attempts. He went 34 of 40, 317 yards, 3 touchdowns. Against the blitz this week, Greg Roman spoke all week about how Todd Bowles likes to blitz. He spoke about it in the press conference. Herbert against the blitz, 12 of 20, 98 yards, interception.
Terrible.
So let me throw it to Andy. You take it. Greg Roman, where are you on him? Let's have a quick little discussion. If this offense does not improve materially to finish the season, would you fire him?
Would I fire him or would the team fire him?
Nope. You.
I don't think I would. I call it stupid. He does enough little things here and there to indicate to me that he's not as bad as what we're putting out. There's been injuries. There's been missing players. Herbert's obviously injured. Mm-hmm. So I think with an improved, possibly interior offensive line, maybe a tight end one or got the news strip down the bottom. Very good, Jack. we've got a better chance to improve next year under Greg Roman. So, you know, it's another year with Herbert in the fold with him. All of those sort of things. I don't want a fifth OC in as many in 6 years. So. Let's try and get a little bit of continuity, build upon what we have. We did discuss that, you know, Roman wasn't going to be built in a day. So, look, let's let it breathe for another year. It is very flattening, though, because scoring 21.9 points per game with Justin Herbert as your quarterback is not acceptable. So,
no,
it's got to improve.
It's not. And I shared with some of the guys offline, and I actually did a little quick Twitter post today, that when Roman is high flying and it's a Roman offense, the only real metrics we've got a lot of metrics to look at. I actually looked at where the targets are distributed. In his 2019 to 2022 stint in Baltimore, he is top of the NFL for targeting tight ends. I think the split was something around in the 2022 season, which was his last season with Baltimore, it was about 44 to the wide receivers percent, 44 to the tight ends, and the rest to the running backs. So we know that Roman's not going to target the running backs. We've said that previously. But currently, from what I could find from the data online at the moment, he's only targeting his tight ends around 23-24% of the time. So it's less than second half. So when I said at the start, this isn't a team that looks like a hardball team, it's also not an offense that physically at the positions where Roman needs quality, it's just not there. So don't be surprised if we go tight end very, very early in the 2025 draft. I wouldn't fire him either, Andy. I think that's just silly, because who are you going to get? You're not going to get a top five guy come and work for you. It's going to be another person who hasn't worked with Harbaugh before. But the big question, and I've asked this as well, Alistair, do you think Jim Harbaugh will put winning over friendship when it comes to making that call, if it is really his call to make, because it's kind of Ortiz's call? But what do you think? Or have we lost Alistair again?
I think we may have. We did speak about that a little bit last week, and it's an interesting question to make, because it's obviously a lengthy friendship, professional relationship, all those sort of things. And Harbaugh strikes me as the guy that is just blinded by his directional belief, I guess. So if he sees it, he will go at it and go at it until who knows what the failure is, but. I think he'd struggle to fire his mate Greg.
But you kind of have to be, right? You have to, like, to be a head coach, you have to have this mindset of like, I guess I'm right. I'm going to go for it. Alistair, I'm interested to hear your opinion. Do you think that Harbaugh would put winning over friendship or friendship over winning with Roman? Because that's a very interesting kind of dynamic. We had it with Staley and Lombardi, obviously. So, and Staley made the hard call, or Tom made the hard call there. So what do you think?
I just don't think he'll do it after one season. I think there are too many potential excuses where they'll say, hey, we don't have a wide receiver one. We don't have an interior line. We don't have a tight end one. Where are the running backs? This was a rebuild year. We're actually ahead of schedule. Trust the plan. I don't necessarily disagree with that as well, I've got to say. I mean, I'm sympathetic to the view that it does take time to build things, and Roman has deficiencies, and he also has some strengths. High average depth of target, high yards per attempt. Traditionally, he's had a very strong running game. He does use mobile quarterbacks well. So I think with a better roster around him, is he a great OC? Probably not. But I could see us competing in playoff games, just like he did with the 49ers. They made a Super Bowl, remember? And with the Ravens for all those years, especially with a quarterback like Justin Herbert. So I know we're beating around the bush a bit. It's difficult to answer the question without knowing who the replacement candidate is, right? Because if it's another young guy, you run the risk of losing that person to be a head coach after one or two seasons again. And then it's another OC for Herbert. So I think Roman's age actually kind of works in his favor here. He probably is not a guy a lot of teams will be looking to poach as a head coach. And if things go well, you've got a Steve Spagnuolo-esque, really experienced coordinator who can be there forever. So I think we've gone around on Greg Roman. Do we want to – I know there weren't many positive things to touch upon on the offense. I was just going to throw one out there. Been hypercritical of Quentin Johnston at different points this season. I love that game from him. I love the way he was used. The touchdown was fantastic. He looked locked in, and he looked dynamic. Apart from that, what else? What other positives are there, Andy? Do you got anything else from the offense before we flip to the other side?
Yeah, G-man. Even Ladd was dropping balls, wasn't he? I don't know. you'd say Stone Smart was good, had a fumble late in the game, and let's be fair, we were not really watching once Heinicke came in. You'd already gone home, packed it in. That's fair. I don't know. Off the top of my head, I don't think there was much that was really positive or enlightening on the offense. It looked good on script at the start of the game. And then, I don't know, it just fell apart and wasn't.
Love it.
No bueno.
Yeah. For me, some positives. Rashawn Slater continues to be really good watching the line. Just really quickly, I watched it after the broadcast a couple of hours later. I didn't get to the coach's film. Really good to see that they're now putting Solier in, because Pipkins is just not taking that spot. So they're actually, what Solier had 23 snaps. Pipkins had 39. So that was a little lower for Solier last week. But it's clear that they might want to work Solier in maybe down the stretch. And maybe we have to sort of think about life without Trey Pipkins in the near future. But Joe Alt continues to be solid. You know, he's leading the Pro Bowl votes, I think. Rashawn Slater's not getting the love that he deserves, I think. But, you know, Joe Alt's a rookie and rookies get a lot of airtime. So bar that, not much else. And DJ Chark played some snaps. Got 9 snaps this week. So hooray.
9 for 9.
For that. Awesome.
Yeah. I think I saw Chenault in 1 run blocking snap and it was not great. It was on the false side.
They used him before they went to Chark, so that said something. They were using him in motion. He was at least getting snaps before DJ Chark got snaps late in the game. Chark has 2 catches in junk time. No idea what to make of it. All right, let's flip it. Let's have a quick chat about the defense. Obviously, the worst performance of the season in many respects. You can pull out numbers for days on, yardage allowed, deep completions allowed, explosive plays allowed, all things we haven't really seen from this defense before.
Yeah.
The one that stood out to me, you can't just have 5 total pressures on the quarterback for an entire game. Diagnose that for me, Jack. What is that telling you about... Don't forget, people were saying this is going to be the best edge group in the entire NFL. You've got Bosa, Mac, Tooley, and Bud Dupree. So what's that say about them?
The Bucs' offensive line are no slouches. It just seemed to me that Evans was getting off. He was finding holes in the zone. Who was that other player that got this McMillan guy who's fast as well? And you know what? You know that one of Baker Mayfield's drivers, there's a bit of a golf analogy, you know, the thing that he goes to the most is quick hitters. He loves to get the ball out of his hand really, really quickly. And in that second half, he goes, 8 for 8, 200 something yards, 3 touchdowns or whatever it was. He was just on fire. And it looks like he knew what he saw in front of him. And the edge group just didn't really get there. Mac was close a couple of times. Bosa's lumbering. Puna and Tart, I thought, held up relatively well. But again, it just after halftime, it just seemed the whole team just looked like they had the air taken out of them. And so I wonder how much of an impact Cam Hart's injury possibly had. That's really grasping at straws there, but it was a pretty severe concussion. And Cam Hart seems to be a guy that the defense relies on, is kind of a heart and soul guy, along with Steele as this rookie. What say you,
or
Andy?
Or Jack, could it be someone else, Andy? Could it be as simple as Denzel Perryman's been out of this lineup a few weeks? Team's not looking the same as when he was out there.
For sure. A big thing of Jesse Minter's defense is the coverage relies a lot on pass rush and getting pressure home and not being able to do that. Like you said, Jack, allowed Mike Evans to find holes. And when the first sort of line of coverage was beaten, he's too big for Tahib Steele and Elijah Molden and Christian Fulton. He's just a big guy. And we got flat out gassed by Liam Cohen and Baker Mayfield. So Perryman continues to be a really big out for this defensive unit. And look, to think that Cam Hart or Tahib Steele are the factors, you know, them having an off game or, you know, being out of the game for half of it is a bit of a reach for me. I just think we were out-coached and outplayed and ground down to the bone for being on the field that long.
Yeah, because I thought the effort was still mostly there. I thought it really was offensive scheming, doing a good job taking advantage of defensive tendencies.
Yeah. But Perryman's not generating pressure on the quarterback, though. He's more of a run defender. So, okay, not having Denzel Perryman there, fair enough, maybe stopping Bucky Irving and White. But Bucky Irving in and of himself, he's kind of a bit of a slippery kind of back. So I don't know. I just like Mike Evans
game as well.
Yeah. But I mean, Mike Evans, 159 yards. How do you stop him when he's on song? What is the guy? 6 foot six, probably 105 kilos. You can't put Derwin on him because he's far too athletic for Derwin and fast. You put Fulton on him. Fulton's too small. The guy's a beast, man. And I don't care what you say. That guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. He's unbelievable. We had this debate offline anyway.
Is the Hall of very good? He's
unbelievable.
He's very good. At any stage has he been a top wide receiver in the NFL at any point of his career?
Yes, he has. He's been top five most of his career.
Show me the year and we'll look at the other wide receivers and he would not have been a top five.
Yeah, but receiver. You have to value the question consistency.
That's it. I do value consistency. I think we'll probably get in. But when I think of the great wide receivers I've watched play, Mike Evans is not even in my mind. But he killed us, so good on him. Very good player. Don't get me wrong. I'm sounding too disrespectful.
Paul, very good.
He's in my mind.
But it's become one of those cliches with him. Oh, first ballot Hall of Fame. Oh, Mike Evans, 1,000 yards every year. It's just some players are lucky. They suddenly get this epithet attached to them wherever they go. And, well, has a few more 159-yard games with a couple of TDs, and he won't be doing his chances any harm whatsoever. Anyway, Jack must have played with him in Madden as well. So, quick. Sorry, I got to stop using that one. I want to talk. What do I want to talk about? I want to talk about Joey Bosa. That's what I want to talk about, Jack, because you mentioned him before.
Yeah.
Is this his last year as a Charger now? Is it just obvious that this is coming to an end? Because, simple as that. Because he's tied for the league lead with five offsides, neutral zone penalties. I can't watch him do this anymore.
Yeah, I think his body's cooked as well. I just think his like the mental load that it must be taking him, and you just see he starts every preseason being really happy, like my body's never felt better, and then in a preseason game he's like, oh, I think I felt something in my groin, and he's out for 6 weeks. So whether he finds a team and plays as that sort of like a Bud Dupree type signing somewhere, and he comes in and on a pitch count essentially. It's unfortunate because he goes down as a great Charger, one of the best in terms of edge players. But yeah, and I don't know if Khalil Mack goes around again. He's been solid enough that I'd love to have him, but then one more year on, this edge group is kind of going, well, who's going to take the mantle? So I'm not too sure.
Can the Chargers currently afford for both Bosa and Mack to not be with the team next year? Is Tooley the number one guy? Is he capable of being the number one?
It would make them draft one for sure. Yeah. They'd have to really hit it or attack free agency, and I don't see much point in that if you can re-sign the guy you've already got.
When you say afford, Andy, do you mean like by play or by physical cash?
Oh, like by play.
Oh, by play.
We're going to have a huge cap number next year, but, like I tend to agree with Al, you kind of have to hit edge in the first two, maybe even the first round if you're picking in the 20s. So it's like that is an expense that I don't think the Chargers want to have to afford in that regard for building a stronger offense around Justin Herbert.
You kind of hope that if they do walk, then the defense doesn't sort of regress, because it possibly could. And do you sacrifice the defense regressing to improve the offense with Greg Roman? Poor big call. But then again, you look at Ortiz and what Ortiz has done for the defense in free agency with Tier Tart and Puna Ford. You just never know where you might pick up an edge player that comes in. Dupree, bit of a failure, I think you said a couple of weeks ago, Alistair, sort of not really producing that much. We've lost him again, but that's okay. Not Bud Dupree, but Alistair. He seems to be frozen looking.
Lost both of them at the moment.
He's looking, for listeners, he's frozen and he's looking down his nose directly at me in sort of like some 1984 I Am Your Master type. But yeah, so who knows? I trust in Ortiz to do some chefing in the off season, Andy.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Just depends on what the influx and or the ebb and flow of that defensive line is next year, with Puna and Taier performing pretty well on relatively low snap counts week by week. But adding into the mix the need for a top edge receiver is takes away from a lot of the other positions that, you know, we're sort of predicting the Chargers need to attend next year. But that's that. Any further shining lights on defense? Should we get into Errol? Errol's got something.
Yeah, I'll just say we are seeing the Minta defense struggle a bit for the first time, and teams working us out in certain respects, whether it's using hurry up, using the quick game to take advantage of a defense that does like to play zone upwards of 90% of the time on first and second down. Sometimes missing someone like Perriman makes a difference, because we play so much zone coverage on the back end with two safeties and we want to play with light boxes against the run. When that doesn't work and the opposition starts to be able to run the ball on us, it can kind of snowball. And I think that's what started happening. We couldn't stop the run, and then they took advantage with play action, and on it went, Jack.
Alistair, what was the blitz rate from the Chargers? Do you have those numbers at handy? It's
Off the top of my head, it was something like 30%. It was not unusually high. Pretty standard.
Not particularly exotic either. One thing to Minter's credit is that what we
late in the game, he started sending.
Yeah, so like we always said since preseason that we saw some very exotic looks from Minta, and we go, oh, I wonder when he's going to whip those out in the season. And we've seen flashes, but it has been a fairly consistent kind of showing most weeks. And I feel like if we reflect on our conversation about Roman and where the offense goes, and that's kind of all maps are leading to a dead end almost, perhaps Minta, because they've been performing so well, does have some things up his sleeve in the final weeks of the season if we need to. But when that wild card game comes around, we just start throwing some completely different things at whoever we're playing. I feel far more positive about the defense than I do the offense.
Yeah, I tend to agree. They've shown a lot more than the offense has anyway. So there we go. All right, Al, over to you. Yeah, no award, mate.
We've mentioned him. Yeah, nah. The yeah part is Justin Herbert making it all the way to fifth all-time for consecutive passes without throwing an interception. But the nah is twofold. It's the manner of the interception, Jack. As you said, second and 10 from the LA 10, heaving the ball was very un-Herbert-like, somewhat Rivers-like, at least the later years of his career. So that was the nah. Also, he now finishes with 357 attempts, which is one fewer attempt than Tom Brady's 358 hats. And some people out there will know that I've got a sick pathological disdain for Tom Brady. So just for Tom Brady to appear twice on the list above Herbert, once as a Buck, once as a Patriot, geez, Justin, just damn it. Damn it. Yeah, nah.
Fair enough. You had your pick, like... I think for me, it's one of the harder weeks to do the nah, yeah, because most of the plays were better early on before it all went to shit. Mm. But look, I just picked up a bit of a random one. Junior Colson has had a pretty rough go of it for his rookie season. He was responsible for the Rashad White touchdown, but had some decent moments in run defense, four tackles, and was responsible for a stop on 17.6%. So one little positive out of a quagmire of woe for the defense this week. So good things for Colson ahead.
All right. Well, this week's teachable moment, it's a short one, and so which you will like, both of you. It's brought to you by volcanoes. In 1815, the eruption of Mount Tambora seemed like just another volcanic event, but its ash cloud spread across the globe, blocking sunlight and triggering the infamous year without a summer, or poverty year, and my favourite moniker for this event, 1800 and froze to death. Crops failed, temperatures dropped, and societies felt the ripple effect of a single collapse. The Chargers 0 for 6 on third downs, I think that's incorrect, but I'll leave it, and 0 for 2 on fourth downs, are their own version of Mount Tambora exploding. Isolated failures on key plays that darken the entire game, leading to a stalled drive, overexposed defenses, and an offense frozen under pressure. But just as societies adapted and innovated in the aftermath of Tambora, the Chargers have the talent to rebuild. Maybe not this year, but next year. With better structure and execution in critical moments, they can turn these small collapses into opportunities for growth and stability. But we just have to wait and see this Thursday in Denver. Glass dismissed.
Nice one. And on to Denver we go. Week 16 up against the Broncos. Got away with one a little bit off the back of three relatively early Bo Nix interceptions. It was just craziness for the Colts to be leading and do what they were doing. So there was the drop TD run by Jonathan Taylor that wound up in a turn touchback. The trick play lateral to Adonai Mitchell, who then took the better half of a quarter to throw the ball straight back to Nick Bonito for a pick six. Four total turnovers, an inability to get out of their own way. Broncos charged back, and in the fourth quarter, stormed over Indy 31-13 and leapfrogging the Chargers into sixth seed. Pat Surtain, notably, was helped off the ground late in the fourth. He's been listed as a full participant at practice, though, so I don't know if he will even miss. We'll just have to wait and see. But John Franklin Myers, DJ Jones, Jaleel McLaughlin join Riley Moss as pretty big question marks heading into the short break. On the Chargers front of things, Fulton, Herbert and Perryman all limited. QJ Molden, Obonya and Will Disley did not practice. But interesting to note that Zion Johnson, who we saw get rolled up on during the Bucks game, was not listed at all. So that would be good because we can move straight into this. Rather than going through the game and how we expect it to unfold, let's just have a bit of a chat about things that we want to be keeping a close eye on. Just really interested to see kind of change or stay the same. So Jack, take us away.
So I interpreted this as what I'm looking for from Denver. So there's a bit of a myth around that Bo Nix is this, and the Peyton offense is this short game, and then he gets the ball out of his hand really, really quickly. And he's dropping back 30, 35, 40 times a game, fair enough. But for those who are interested in numbers, his average depth of target is this year's 8.3. So that's not small at all. And his big time throw rate has gradually increased pretty much, sort of by a couple of percentage points per week. So yes, the Peyton offense will have a short game involved in it. But I tell you what, Bo Nix has been uncorking it a little bit. And if we don't get our back end sorted, Peyton and Nix will take advantage of that. So I'm really looking at Bo Nix to see what type of Bo Nix we're going to get.
Let me build on that, Jack. Because look, Nix has been playing pretty terribly the last 2 weeks, but before then he's been a huge success story this season. I want to see from this team in response to what just happened, how the cornerbacks go defending proper X receivers. Because I think we now have a trend. T. Higgins had 148 yards against us. Drake London had 86 yards. Mike Evans now 159 yards, two touchdowns. Cam Sutton, he's that same
Courtland
kind
Sutton.
Of... Courtland Sutton. He's that same style of wide receiver. Big guy. And when we played them earlier in the year, he had the 53 yards and a touchdown. I feel like we're getting exploited on dig routes. So they're using someone to clear out the slot and then they're sending the outside X on the digs, taking advantage of quarters coverage, cover six. And I'm watching this team. Who's going to step up? Cam Hart's unlikely to play, right? So it's got to be Fulton or it's got to be Leonard or it's got to be Tahib Still, whoever's on the field. That's something I want to see from this team.
Maybe.
Thanks for bringing up Cam Hart. Obviously suffered a second concussion in about 4 weeks, so that one looked pretty nasty. I am of opinion that he sits the rest of the year because that stuff's pretty serious. He did not practice either. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the defense covers. I'm looking straight at Greg Roman again this week. If Zion's good to go, I would like to see Solier in for Pipkins at right guard. And I just want to see how, if Herbert is further injured than he was coming into this week, how Roman crafts the offense around him against the number one defense in the league. And it's going to be really difficult because without a run game, it's just going to be drop back and drop back and like another 30 or 40 drop backs. But
and Andy, in that Colts
game, find a way, brother.
You saw just how much Anthony Richardson's legs was key to them actually being able to move the ball. The Broncos have had a great run defense. The Colts with Taylor, it's that threat RPO. It really worked. Yeah. And while Herbert's hobbled, man, if you end up getting in a drop-back passing game, as you've just said, Vance Joseph is the same school as Todd Bowles. Blitz, 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 baby. It's going to be it's going to be trouble.
Yep. Result prediction, fellas, before we move on to the NFL headlines. I would love to say that I think we're going to get this one done, but I'm looking at like a 20 to 13 kind of loss here. And I just don't know how we can manufacture an offense it's potent enough to score against Vance Joseph's defense, man.
No. When you hire Jim Harbaugh and put in a performance like that, you don't put in a second bad one. Not with this team, not with these leaders on the field. I have faith, especially watching how terrible the Broncos offense was against the Colts. Nick's threw three picks. He didn't know what he was doing. And against us, the Broncos had 0 points to three-quarter time, it will be recalled, and Nick's was all at sea. Trust Jesse Minter. Athea, I'm on your side this week, brother. Chargers are going to win 28 to 21.
I have no idea where those 28 points are coming from unless Dick is kicking like 13 field goals.
Stone smart. 120 yards, two tutties.
Yeah, or Ladd McConkey has another big game and goes from there. I am on the side of Andy. I'm going to go, it's going to be a close one, 2017 loss to Denver. I just don't know where the points are coming from because, as you alluded to, Alistair, the Broncos have a wonderful run defense. We're running the ball for 30 yards a game. Sweet. Herbert, I'm worried for your life. Please don't get injured. Win out, make the wild card, go from there.
Jack's cried all the tears he can.
Payton. Sean Payton's got a game plan up his sleeve. He's going to pull something out. He's been watching. He's seen something on tape, Jack.
It's a revenge game for Sean Payton. Last time he was in SoFi, sitting there, he was like, I'm going to be the coach of this team. No, you weren't. Fuckhead.
All right, around the NFL. I think there's a very good chance we could have seen the Super Bowl preview when the Bills headed to Detroit. 48-42 scoreline. The play involved is exciting as it comes, but at what cost for this Lions team? Now boasting an IR list of 22 strong. Carlton Davis, Alim McNeil, who looks like he's done his ACL, Khalil Dorsey was carted off, and David Montgomery with potentially a season-ending MCL sprain. Could this end the run for the Lions, who I've called it the Motor City Measles that have taken over this team? Is it going to be too much for their quest to lift their first Lombardi? Because the Eagles are coming into some really good form. There's only so much the hard-nosed Dan Campbell can cover.
How can poor Jared Goff, right? What does he throw for 400-something yards, 5 touchdowns, no picks, and still loses?
Incredibly, earlier this year he threw 5 interceptions and they won. So he's a bit of that kind of scorigami operator.
Yeah. Well, I hope they make it. I think they're a wonderful, wonderful team and franchise. Love Dan Campbell. My headline.
Let me jump in because mine is actually linked to the same game. So I'll build on it. In case listeners think that I'm always the go for it aggressive guy, there does come a certain point where it can go too far. And I feel like Dan Campbell reached that point. So PFF does a fourth down bot that's actually very aggressive as a bot. It really is telling people to go for it. Apparently all season, Dan Campbell has been 26% more aggressive than the PFF fourth down bot. So when the PFF bot says punt, he's like, go for it. And in this game, of course, the score was 38-28 after a Lions touchdown. And Campbell, with 12 minutes remaining, decides to go for an onside kick, which, under the new rules, must be declared.
Correct. Yeah. I think you forgot that one.
What the fuck are you doing? The success rate on onside kicks is 3 of 41 this year. So the Bills watched it and Mac Hollins picked it up and went for 38 yards and the Bills scored on the next play. So I'm all for aggression, Dan, but that is not knowing your maths. That's just being foolhardy. That's just going, yep, go for it.
Yeah.
And that works like well on Madden, not when you're trying to win a Super Bowl.
It worked well for him last week, didn't it? Going for that that play at the end there against the Packers, but
that is
not
true.
So much this week.
It's almost like he sort of forgot that you had to declare as part of the new rules.
You know, he
probably had one too many big coffees that day, perhaps.
Yeah, just like how Dicker forgot that you got to kick it past the 20 last week.
Or he thinks that little of Aaron Glenn. Either way, yeah. It's not...
Either way, yeah.
God. Sorry, Jack. You
yeah, off, my one is actually from the game today. I watched the Vikings versus Da Bears.
Here we go.
And I'm not going where you think I am, Alistair. Everyone knows, if you listen to this podcast long enough, not a fan of Caleb Williams. I'm not going there, actually. I'm going across the field, and I'm going to look at Coach of the Year, because I think it should be Coach O'Connell of the Year. Kevin O'Connell, after losing Kirk Cousins... Obviously, Kirk Cousins tore his Achilles, but, you know, then luck of the draw says your first round draft pick and JJ McCarthy goes down and is out for the year. And you go, far out. What am I going to do here? Bring in Darnold. And he's been completely revitalized. Didn't have a great game today, but the guy's slinging it. And there is no doubt that Kevin O'Connell, with all these barriers to them, what are they now, 12-2? Incredible. Incredible, incredible. Kevin O'Connell, you're the man. They're going to be a little bit frisky. I don't think Sam Darnold has the talent to actually make any noise in the playoffs, but geez, there's Aaron Jones, you got your Justin Jefferson, your Jordan Addison. Wouldn't he be really nice right about now? I just lost my mind there. But no, Kevin O'Connell.
And popped an eyeball.
Popped a puffer valve. Yeah, Kevin O'Connell, Coach of the Year. That's what I'm looking at. I thought it was going to be Harbaugh, but no.
Good call. Especially with what happened to that secondary heading into the season.
Yeah.
In all kinds of ways, bad news. But yeah, very impressive to be 12-2.
So Andy's ended us off with a high there. Anyway.
It's just impressive what that organization's done. It is. All right. Well, yeah, on that note, that'll probably do us this week. We've got a quick turnaround, so expect the show around next weekend sometime. And look, we've tipped 2-1 for the Broncos to win. Let's hope it's the other way, because it is a big swing game as far as the
Come on, Chargers. Come on.
The seeding goes for the playoffs, so fingers crossed. Have a good week, guys. See you next time on Thunder Down Under.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, zigzag, 10, 5, high step, touchdown, San Diego!
Woo! Good night to all!